Walker on McGee with four. Kemba Walker. Step back. Walker. Cardiac Kemba does it again. UConn wins at the buzzer.
Oh! My goodness! Sorrenti hit that one from the parking lot.
3 seconds at midcourt. Gives it to Jenkins.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Full Court Fridays. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle, here with my boy Jeff.
Hello everybody, welcome back to season two of Full Court Fridays.
It's kind of hard to call this season two if, you know, we barely even had a season one, but we're back at it, we're back on the grind again. It's good to be back. It's been almost a year since we did an episode of this. We kind of fell off the map a little bit at the end of last season, but we're looking to stay a little more consistent this year. Hopefully we don't hit any snags or bumps in the road or anything. So, yeah, but it's been a while. A lot's changed. Two good things happened. Me and Jeff both graduated. But it's
a good thing and a bad thing.
It's a bad thing because that means that Jeff's no longer my roommate, which is really sad. I miss you, Jeff. but, yeah, so we're both adults now. Jeff's working an office job. I'm professionally unemployed. Yeah, but life's life. So without further ado, let's get into the college basketball season because that's what we're here to do. And, yeah, Jeff, you want to start us off?
Sure. We're going to get right into it, talk about the predictions, our predictions for the Final Four. I think my last three picks are pretty consistent with what a lot of people have, and that they're Duke, Arizona, and Michigan State. But the fourth pick I kind of struggled with and wrestled with. I thought originally I was going to be choosing between Villanova, Miami, and Florida as my fourth team. But after last Friday in the Armed Forces Classic, watching Texas A&M, I think they're going to be they are my fourth Final Four team, and I think they're going to win the SEC. Watching them, it was impressive because they came back from a deficit against West Virginia, which is obviously difficult because of how they play defense and how they press. I think they came back from down, I think, 13 points because it was 23-10 at one point. And there's a lot to like about this team. Obviously, they're very well coached, and having Billy Kennedy, they're not really a secret anymore in terms of they're not going to surprise new people or be overlooked on anybody's schedule. They have a lot of experience, especially down low. And one thing to note, that they beat West Virginia handily without Robert Williams, who's going to give them a big boost on offense in terms of taking some pressure off of Tyler Davis on the block. And then also defensively, Tyler Davis isn't necessarily that athletic, so Robert Williams is going to be able to come in and protect the rim on the perimeter. They have a guy who I'm a big fan of in DJ Hogue. He has really good size for his position. He's a small forward or a shooting guard. He's about 6'8", 6'9". He can really shoot three well, which will help them when they're playing from behind. And then Dwayne Wilson was also really impressive to me running the point as a freshman, especially given West Virginia press and how they play defense. He handled it well. He's really poised. And there's a couple of players I wasn't familiar with who are underclassmen, but they stepped up and contributed well in the times they had to, the opportunities they had to shine. And then one more thing I want to add about A&M is the SEC, from an individual team standpoint, this season is going to be as strong as it's ever been. They could probably get, what do you think, Alex, like 6 or 7 teams in the tournament. Just off the top of my head, I could think of at least 5 that should be getting out large bids on Selection Sunday.
I was thinking that too. The SEC is no longer like the bottom of the barrel when it comes to the college basketball Power 5 conferences. It's definitely got a lot more parity this year, especially like you said with A&M. We knew they were going to be good, but I didn't think we'd see them just beat West Virginia the way they did on a neutral floor.
Yeah, it was actually, they got me thinking they could be, at least in my eyes, this year's version of South Carolina. Even though, but that being said, I don't think they'll surprise as many people as South Carolina did last season because they started off ranked in the top 25 nationally.
Yes, yeah, so South Carolina was more of a Cinderella. I feel like A&M was. We were expecting big things, and especially with the injuries,
we knew things. I think for them, what we were expecting last year is what we're going to get this year.
I can see that. Yeah, absolutely.
And then, like I said, they'll be battle tested. Just off the top of my head, they're going to play Kentucky, Florida, Arkansas, Alabama, all twice. So, and then Missouri, so that's a good, 10 games that are going to be competitive in conference and big chance to pick up RPI boosting wins. So I can't see them falling below a 4 seed, if that. Realistically, I think they'll be a top 2 or 3 seed. So that's my surprise pick for the Final Four. And then The other three teams I have in there aren't really a surprise, just because they've received a lot of preseason hype, which is warranted. So I'll start with Arizona. At this point, I think the only team that could really compete with Arizona is Michigan State, and that's why I have them. I have them losing to Michigan State in the national championship, but as long as there's no NCAA sanctions or punishments handed down on Arizona, I don't think there's really that many teams in college basketball that could give them a difficult time. They should run the table in the Pac-12 pretty handily. UCLA is pretty young. Oregon's kind of a down year. I can't really think of any other Pac-12 teams that would actually give them a legit run for their money. They were really impressive against Northern Arizona the last Friday. Alonzo Trier had, I think, 30 points. And if he can stay healthy, he's going to give them a really big boost, perimeter scoring. Their recruiting class they bring in is going to give them a good mix in terms of guys who can contribute off the bench, like Alex Barcelo when he comes in and can run the point as a backup for Parker Jackson Cartwright. And then Brandon Randolph off the bench is going to give them a lot of good shooting. Obviously, DeAndre Ayton's a stud. He should be, I guess, Michael Porter Jr.'s biggest competition for the number one overall pick, even though I think Kevin Knox, as the season goes on, is going to start to creep in that discussion as well.
But yeah, that's the thing I see with Arizona is they really don't have a real weak spot that I could tell. Their backcourt's stacked.
And their front court goes at least five deep. They have Dusan Rushdit still, Pender. They still have DeAndre Ayton, Ira Lee off the bench. So, I mean,
I feel like the biggest hit they took last year, I feel like, was the loss of Lauri Markkanen. But I feel like size-wise, Ayton's going to be a good replacement for him.
Exactly. And the thing that nobody's really talking about is they're playing without Rowley Hawkins right now. I think he's out till the beginning of January or late December with a foot injury. So once he comes back and gets kind of shakes some of that rust off, I think he'll be even scarier. The only thing that really concerns them for me isn't anything that's going to go on between the lines. It's more of when they get into – assuming they make the postseason run that everybody's expecting, when they get deeper in the tournament. I don't want to call Sean Miller inexperienced, but he hasn't been to a Final Four yet, so I don't think that stage will get to him, but that and the NCAA are the only things I could really see. That, the NCAA and Michigan State are the only things I could see slowing him down. They should go into conference play undefeated. Like, I can't really think of – I know they play UConn, but that's not really saying much, but I don't know who else is tough and on their out-of-conference schedule in the next 6 weeks before January comes.
That's a good point. I think the thing with Sean Miller, I feel like, is a lot of people look at him the same way they kind of looked at Mark Few and Gonzaga up until last year, where no one really believed that they could make a Final Four until he actually did. Yeah, and so I feel like
achieving, like,
yeah, they
since they accomplished everything else, like, he's done everything else at Arizona that he could. He has the lottery picks.
He's made three Elite Eights since he's been at Arizona. He's been there. This is his ninth season. He's been to the Elite Eight three times. So it's a little ridiculous, you know, that people kind of judge him based on what he hasn't done yet when he already has done so much.
You know, I feel like in college sports in general, it's just that keeping up with the Joneses mentality. Like, if you look at college football, like, Mark Richt got fired from Georgia because he couldn't compete with Alabama, and now look what he's doing in Miami. They're undefeated.
Exactly. The U's back. The U is back.
It's the same thing in college basketball. Sean Miller, even though I think he's just as good of a coach, he's not on the same level achievement-wise as somebody like Coach K or Tom Izzo or Cal, Bill Self, even somebody like Jim Boeheim, who has won national championship. So I think that's the next logical step for them to take, and they haven't necessarily taken that step yet. So a lot of people are going to get – are not necessarily frustrated, but they're going to be kind of antsy, and that's what they want to see out of Arizona. But I think they'll be in the national championship game this year. I just don't know if they could beat Michigan State.
I definitely agree. I see them at least making a Final Four. I feel like Sean Miller's got such a chip on his shoulder about, you know, all the doubters that say he can't make it because he hasn't done it yet. And I feel like this is his year to break through, and this is probably the best squad that he's had in his time at Arizona. Trier came back, obviously, and in the games that he did play last season, he was an absolute beast. He was a leading scorer in points per game. And then you got Ayton down low, you know, replacing Markkanen in that 4-5 role. And I don't know, I just think another person that I'm kind of high on coming in this recruiting class is Brandon Rudolph. I think he's going to be a really good scorer.
I think he'll give him good minutes off the bench. Like, just to be clear, I think Michigan State is the biggest threat to Arizona. I want to pick Arizona, and that's why I have winning the national championship. At the same time, I'm kind of skeptical, but based off of the talent they have and the blend of experience and youth, it's hard to pick against them. So that's who I think will win the national championship. I think Michigan State will give them a serious run for their money, being that they brought everybody back from the 2016 class. That's actually the next team I want to get into. Obviously, the expectations are probably the highest they've ever been in Lansing for Michigan State. They bring pretty much their whole core of the 2016 recruiting class back. And then they also add like Jaren Jackson to the mix. And they have some other experienced guys like Tumtum Naren, Ben Carter, and Gavin Schilling off the bench. So they have a lot of big bodies and guards that they can give teams different looks. And I think Tom Izzo, it reminds me of the team kind of like in terms of expectations-wise, it reminds me of the team they had in 2014 when they lost to UConn in the Elite Eight. They could go big, they could go small, they have guards that could score. And obviously Miles Bridges is a little bit better than Gary Harris just statistically, but he's still kind of the same role that Gary Harris was as their go-to guy to score. And then Adrian Payne was their second option down low, which is pretty similar to Jaren Jackson. So I think that's an encouraging sign for them. I think Michigan State's going to be really good. Honestly, besides Minnesota, I can't really see anybody else in the Big Ten giving them any type of issue at all.
Yeah, there really isn't anyone in the Big Ten. The Big Ten's on they got kind of a down year this year. Ohio State's not good again, even with even with Chris Holtmann, right?
Minnesota. I just watched them play Providence. They look really good. I think they're going to be tough for Michigan State. I'm not sure what Purdue brings back. Obviously, they lost Biggie Swan again, so that's a big chunk of their offense to make up for. I think Maryland will probably be another tournament team out of the Big Ten. They made the tournament last year, and they bring pretty much everybody back.
Maryland's one team I haven't heard a lot about going into the season. They've been kind of under the radar.
Melo Trimble is gone, so people are kind of writing them out. But outside of Melo Trimble, they bring pretty much everybody back. And obviously, Mark Turgeon is a great coach. He's going to have them ready to play. So I think they'll make the tournament also. But in a realistic sense, there's not really anybody that can compete with Michigan State in the Big Ten. It's almost like Arizona in the Pac-12. They're just kind of in a league of their own. But I want to see, I think I'm going to talk about this later with the Champions Classic, but I think Josh Lankford and Nick Ward are going to be kind of the X factors for them. So Josh Lankford in high school is a really, really good scorer. And given all the attention that Miles Bridges is going to draw on the wing and then what Jaren Jackson is going to draw down low, I think that Josh Lankford is going to have a lot of good opportunities to get easy buckets, whether it's a catch and shoot three, a backdoor cut, whatever, taking his man one-on-one. There's not going to be as much defensive attention on him, so if he could take advantage of that, I think it will bode really well for Michigan State and their pursuit of a national championship. And then I want to let you get to your Final Four, but I just wanted to rattle off what I think about my last team real quick. I have Duke as my last team in. I think the ACC is almost like what we were just talking about with the Big Ten. It's kind of a down year. North Carolina lost everything. Duke brought in the best recruiting class in the country. Syracuse, I don't really know what to say about them. Louisville looked really bad yesterday versus George Mason. And then
yeah, I was kind of surprised by that Louisville team. I knew the loss of Rick Pitino would hurt them, but they looked almost lost out there.
Exactly. And I don't think it's going to get much smoother with all the NCAA pending investigations going on. I would like to see them get Brian Bowen back just to see what he does.
I highly doubt Brian Bowen's coming back this year. After what happened, there's very little chance, in my opinion, that he comes back. But I'd love to see him play in college, though. That would be interesting.
I don't know who else is really in the ACC that's a legit threat to Duke.
Some of the sleepers from last year, like Florida State's probably going to be on a down year again this year.
Yeah, they lost everything. Xavier Rathan Mays is gone. Jonathan Isaac's gone. Dwayne Bacon's gone.
Well, Xavier's in the Big East, right?
No, Xavier Rathan Mays, like the player.
Oh, okay.
He's on the Knicks now. Jonathan Isaac's on the Magic. Dwayne Bacon's on the Charlotte Hornets. So I don't really know. The cupboard's pretty bare for Leonard Hamilton.
I kind of like Virginia Tech as a sleeper in the ACC. Oh, yeah,
Tech would be good. Nikhil Walker-Alexander is a really good player. He's a freshman for them from Canada. I think it will be probably them, Duke, and Notre Dame fighting for the top three season ACC tournament. But I think Duke will be similar to last year. I know they got beat by South Carolina, which is an eventual Final Four team. But I think they'll go on a run in March and get it together. The only thing that concerns me about Duke is I think when Trayvon Duval committed to Duke, he was under the assumption he was going to be the top guy offensively and the primary scoring option, the go-to guy, which is what he was used to in high school and then in AAU with We Are One New Jersey Players. But now I think the addition of Marvin Bagley is going to cause him to go through some growing pains, just because it's the first time where he's a ball dominant point guard one, but it's also the first time where he hasn't been the number one scoring option on the team. So somebody who's probably more offensively talented than he is on the same roster, and they have to figure out how to get him touches. Well, he still has an impact on the game offensively. So I think it will be good in terms of it will test Trayvon Duval and getting better at running a team, not just looking at the score, but at the same time, just looking at his numbers in their preseason games and then against Elon. I think he had 8-8, which is solid, but you expect more from somebody who might be the first point guard off the board in the NBA draft. I think it's going to be a good test for him. One thing to keep an eye on for Duke, Gary Trent Jr. shot the ball extremely well, like from the beginning of the preseason to now. Like, I don't think I've seen him miss a jumper. So I think if he can keep that up, it's going to take a lot of pressure off of both Duval and then Marvin Bagley, because wings won't be able to double into the post. But I think Duke is pretty in a weird position because they bring back Grayson Allen, who's a four-year guy who's on the national championship team, so he has experience. But outside of that, the whole roster is pretty young and inexperienced. Wendell Carter's a freshman. Javon DeWarrior, he hasn't played that much. Marcus Bolden didn't play that much last year.
I think we can basically consider Marcus Bolden like a freshman.
He didn't really get that many minutes last year. He came in the season injured. So it's just going to be interesting because they have experience, but they really don't. But obviously you have Coach K, probably, besides John Wooden, the best to ever do it at the college level. So I think he'll have them right in March for them. I think it's more of an issue of how the brackets end up. Like, if they had to play a team like Nova or Florida or even Xavier in the Elite Eight or Sweet 16, I don't know if I would pick them. But if they get a favorable side of the bracket, I think they'll be able to make it to the Final Four on talent alone. But out of the four teams I have, this is probably the one I'm most skeptical about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the main factor that puts Duke, who is starting four freshmen, I think, at this point, right? The only starter that's not a freshman is Grayson Allen.
Yep.
But that's the X factor, is Grayson Allen. Like, you compare him to what Kentucky has going on right now, I'm pretty sure Kentucky has five freshmen starting, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and they started. The only difference between the first game, I watched both games, the only difference between the first game and the second game was Quad A Green started at the point on Sunday versus Vermont, and Shea Gilgeous Alexander started against Utah Valley State. I think Quad A Green is better to start at the point. Maybe Cal was trying to send a message because he had a really good second half against Vermont. And I think with Kentucky, like, this is kind of a tangent, but just – you can't really pass judgment on Kentucky until like mid-February, when they've gone through 6 weeks of conference play and then Camp Cal, and they start to realize they're not in high school. Because honestly, watching Kentucky, like, these first two games has been kind of like watching an AAU team in April, where they haven't played together in such a long time, and they're all coming from doing their own thing in the high school season. And so they're not necessarily on the same page and meshing and gelling. They could obviously get by with, I guess, 95% of the country, beat most of the teams in the country just based off of talent alone. But Vermont is the type of team who doesn't beat themselves, shoots the ball well, and they're older and more physically mature. And just historically, that's always given Cal's teams problems, even going back to...
Vermont brought back their four top scorers from last year. Vermont's a legit threat this year. They could easily be a Cinderella pick in the tournament come time.
I think they were a unanimous pick to win the American East, but just that team, that archetype of a team where they're older, they could shoot well, they play smart, they play together, they don't beat themselves. Like, they always give Kentucky problems. Like, even when they went in 2009, they beat Cornell, I think the Sweet 16, but that was a close game. It was a difficult game. Like, Kentucky obviously had the talent advantage, but when they're not able to overwhelm teams with their athleticism and talent, and I think they start to press and get a little bit tense. And that's just something, I guess, with youth and experience that happens a lot. But I think Kentucky will be all right. I think Hamidou Diallo is going to have to be their leading scorer, and they need more out of Kevin Knox on offense. He has to get more comfortable being assertive. And then P.J. Washington's the X factor, I think. But enough out of me. What do you have going on for your Final Four?
Well, kind of took the wind out of my sail there because three of the four teams you mentioned are also in my Final Four. So I have Duke, Michigan State, and Arizona in my Final Four. Instead of A&M, though, I picked Florida. I really like what Mike White has done with this program in the few years that he's been there.
That's what I want to pick, but I just watch A&M, and they were really impressive to me.
I totally understand your pick. I see why you would do that. Florida just absolutely destroyed who they play. It was Gardner Webb. I think they won by obviously double digits. I think it was like 60 something points. It was ridiculous. But Chris Chioza coming back is huge. Kevon Allen. Those guys are going to be, you know, the main guys on that roster. And I think that they're a legitimate threat, honestly, to dethrone Kentucky in the SEC. We were talking about Kentucky. I feel like they're going to come back, obviously. You know, they haven't. All the points you hit, I would repeat. They haven't had that much time to play together.
One thing I want to add, like, this is something I think we both agree on. Like, the SEC is as deep, like you said, they're not a bottom feeder in the Power 5 conferences anymore. And I think that's almost better for Kentucky because half of their conference games are going to be a battle. Like when they play Arkansas, it's going to be tough. Arkansas was the SEC runner-up, regular season runner-up last season. Then you have Missouri with Michael Porter Jr. They looked really good. They beat Iowa State when he only scored 2 points and sat most of the game with a hip injury. Florida's obviously very good. A&M's another tough team. So I think the lack of experience Kentucky has is something that's going to get dealt with early and it's going to be tested often, just given the fact that the SEC is so deep this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I really don't have that much more to add. Like I said, we already covered the other three teams, so I feel like you did a perfect job, and going in any more depth at this point would be pretty pointless. But we do have some tournaments that we want to get to. Do you want to get into the Champions Classic coming up tomorrow night?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited for the Champions Classic. Obviously, the opening game is going to be a great matchup between Duke and Michigan State.
One versus two. That's going to be a good one.
I think a lot of NBA scouts are going to be there. Obviously, to see Duke's freshman, Miles Bridges, see Grayson Allen. One thing I want to add, like NBA-wise for Grayson Allen, this is probably the amount of talent Duke has, probably the best thing for him. It's going to kind of relegate him into a similar role that he'll be in the NBA, which is 3-and-D, make a lot of catch and shoot shots, attack closeout, stuff like that. But the biggest draw, I think, tomorrow, looking forward to the next level in the NBA, is Jaren Jackson versus Marvin Bagley. I think Michigan State's going to win tomorrow, and the reason why is because Marvin Bagley's been playing out of his mind these last two games. I think he's averaging somewhere around 25 points a game, but this is kind of...
He's actually averaging a double-double right now, 24.5 points a game and 10 rebounds a game. So,
exactly. So yeah, right around 25. And I think the thing with Michigan State is, like I said, they have Ben Carter, Gavin Schilling, Nick Ward. They have Jaren Jackson. They have a lot of big bodies that they could throw on him. That when there'll be fresh bodies that are going to play physical, and I think that will wear him down. So if Duke wants to have a legit shot tomorrow, in my opinion, I think they're going to have to rely a lot on Gary Trent Jr. to make a lot of shots and get his own off the bounce. And then Trayvon Duval is going to have to look to take over at times because I think it's going to be asking a lot of Marvin Bagley to deal with the double teams and the physicality and different looks that Michigan State's going to throw at him. And then also rebound and defend at a high level against probably the best team or one of the best teams in the country. So I think for Michigan State, the X factor would be Josh Langford. Just going back on what I said earlier, he's going to have to make open shots and score the easy buckets and take advantage of the opportunities he's going to get. But the key matchup, I think, is going to be between Wendell Carter and Nick Ward, because Nick Ward, a lot of people don't talk about him as much as Cassius Winston and Miles Bridges or even Josh Langford, but he's a bruiser down low. He can get buckets. And if he's going to be able to – he can get his and put more pressure on the Duke front line, maybe even get them in foul trouble, I think it's going to be easier for Michigan State. And then on the other end of that matchup, I think Wendell Carter is going to have to step up. Hopefully he can get some type of high-low action going with Marvin Bagley and just take more pressure off of him on the block. He's obviously very talented offensively. I think he's going to have to show well tomorrow too for Duke to win and also for his NBA stock. Some people think he's a one-and-done. Some people think he isn't. I don't think he is. And I think it would be a mistake for him to leave after 1 year. But if he could show well tomorrow, I think a lot of people's opinions are going to change.
Then, I agree. But, you know, it's only, what, the third game of the season for both teams. So there's a long way to go. There's a lot of time to.
This is a game a lot of scouts are going to look back at.
That's a good point. That's fair.
Because just it's early in the season, everybody's healthy, and it's just such a high level in terms of competition. So I think that would be something to keep an eye on tomorrow. And then Kentucky and Kansas, I'm not really as excited about this game. I don't know if you saw, but Kentucky took a huge dive in the rankings. I think they fell 15th.
I think Kansas, honestly, I was going to say this is probably going to kick the shit out of them at this point. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think like Kentucky is still trying to figure out rotation-wise and things like that. Hopefully the drop in the rankings will make them more, a little bit more motivated, and they'll come out with more of an edge as opposed to kind of where Kentucky will walk all over you. But I think the thing with Kansas is I don't really know. Like, they're not really at full strength. Like, both of the Lawson brothers, Dedrick Lawson and Chan Lawson, both transferred there. But they're sitting out for transfer rules, transfer reasons. Then Sam Cunliffe, he's from Seattle, Washington. He played at Arizona State for a semester. I don't even want to say half a season. Right before conference play, he transferred. And I think he would give Kansas a boost scoring from the wing, which is something going to be missing. I think they're going to have to rely a lot on Billy Preston to take some pressure off of Devontae Graham. But I don't really know if Billy Preston's ready for that. It's not really his style. And hopefully for his sake, he's approved as a defender from his senior year in high school, because I saw him play in the Hoop Hall Classic versus Nathan Hale, and he got chewed by Michael Porter Jr., and he's going to be Kentucky's front line. They're very big. They all have a wingspan over 7 feet, and they're very talented. They can put you in a lot of different predicaments matchup-wise. You have somebody like Kevin Knox who could take you from the wing, or somebody like P.J. Washington who could take you from the post, and then Sasha Keeler Jones and Winning Gabriel who could do a little bit of each. So I think just Kansas's lack of depth, especially down low, is going to hurt them, but I don't think Kentucky will have an answer for Devontae Graham. He's going to have to be huge for them tomorrow for Kansas to win, but I do want to pick Kansas just based off of their experience, and I think that as a team, they have a higher basketball IQ. What do you think about tomorrow, Kyle?
I agree with Duke winning the first game and Kansas winning the second one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I picked Michigan. Oh, wait, you did. My bad. I have Duke in the first game. I think Bagley's going to continue the, you know, what he's been doing. Obviously, Miles Bridges is probably going to go off, but it's going to come around to.
I think Duke's going to answer for him.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I just like Duke. They got the most talented freshman class in recent memory that I can think of, and it seems like Coach K knows what he's doing. You know, it's like Coach K is basically beating Calipari right now at his own game.
He's beating Isaac, yeah, exactly.
So I think the Duke team you see right now to start the season is probably what you would expect Kentucky to be come like tournament time, you know. So I feel like because of that, yes, Michigan State does have more experience, and Miles Bridges is clearly the front runner for National Player of the Year right now. But I think he's going to really have to work to prove it tomorrow. I think Bagley's going to dominate the paint, and it's really, I don't know, the offense flows through Duvall really nicely. I think he's really stepping up into his role as a point guard. And I don't know, it's honestly a pick 'em game, in my opinion. It's a one versus two.
Cashier Winston, from a passing standpoint, just assist average, I think he's going to do Lonzo Ball type of numbers this season, just because he's a pass-first point guard. He has great four vision, obviously, and Michigan State has so many weapons. It's going to be similar to UCLA last year. It's going to be, I don't want to take credit away from say it's easy, but he's going to have a lot of chances to rack up assists.
That's a good point. I don't know. I really like sorry, not to switch games abruptly, but one thing that you didn't really mention in Kansas was in the first game, LeGerald Vick showed up like huge. He led the team in points and I think rebounds. I could be wrong. But he's another guy that I feel like is going to get solid minutes for Kansas. His experience is going to be something that puts them over the top on Kentucky. Him along with Mekhi Luke and Devontae Graham, like you said. are the three of those guys are what I feel like the fact that they have a year playing ball already in college is what's going to make them more experienced than this pretty much five freshman starter Kentucky team.
Yeah, I think for Kansas tomorrow, one thing I did forget to say, I'm really interested to see Udoka Azubuike. He's 7 feet, 260 pounds, and he just turned 18 in September. So his freshman year of college, or his redshirt freshman year of college, he was 17. And I think, like, obviously from a size standpoint, he's obviously very interesting just because that potential he has given his size. But I want to see what he does against Kentucky's front line. They're not necessarily the strongest, but their length and athleticism is probably on par with anybody in the country. Like, I saw they put up a chart of all the guys on Kentucky's roster whose wingspan were over 7 feet. And I think there were like six or seven guys. One of them was Hamidou Diallo. He's right around 7 feet. He had like a 6'10 wingspan. So I want to see what Azubuike does and Billy Preston does. Billy Preston's a guy who, like, just thinking NBA, in my eyes, is pretty similar to Wendell Carter. I don't think he should be a one done, but I think he's going to, that's his objective. But tomorrow is really a good chance for him to show and prove why he should or shouldn't enter the draft in June. But we'll see tomorrow.
And Billy Preston didn't even play yesterday, did he?
No, he got, I guess he parked illegally, and I, like, he had to leave to go move his car. And when he had to do that, he was late for class. So they suspended him for a game, kind of like what Coach K did for Trayvon Duval and Jordan Goldwire and Alex O'Connell. But honestly, I think one thing that kind of gets overlooked with Kentucky and Kansas is Coach Cal and Bill Self is probably the best coaching rivalry in college basketball. But yeah, it's, I think it's better than Roy Williams and Coach K, or even Coach Boeheim and Coach K, because they're pretty similar. They're recent Hall of Fame inductees. They both have won national championship. And the thing about their national championship is each time they've won, the win came over the other coach. So when Cal won in 2012, they beat Kansas. And when Bill Self won in 2008, Kansas beat Memphis. That's when they had Derrick Rose, and Calipari was the coach there. I think it was his second to last season.
That's a good point. I didn't even realize that.
But that's something that gets overlooked a lot in terms of coaching rivalries. I think that's the best one in college basketball. And I'm not sure if they're still doing the SEC Big 12 Challenge, but I know last year Kansas played Kentucky at Rupp. So if they're still doing it, Kentucky will have to go to Fog Allen in January or February and play Kansas, which would be a really good game, obviously, because the teams would be better than they are right now. But
yeah, and Kansas doesn't lose
with that, Kansas and Kentucky. The coaching rivalry kind of gets overlooked.
That's a fair point. Either way, it's going to be an interesting game to watch. I'm excited to see it. I think that's a 9 o'clock tip-off, if I'm not mistaken.
9:30, because they're doing the college football playoff announcement.
Oh, boy, yeah, because that really matters, even though the season still has, like, what, 2 months left?
Whatever. Georgia lost, Notre Dame lost, so there's going to be some movement.
Oh, it's definitely going to be interesting. I know it's not a football podcast, but I don't know, who do you think the four are going to be? I got Miami, Bama, Notre Dame, and Clemson.
I think Miami, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Clemson.
That's a good – wait. You know, never mind. Let's not talk football anymore. Notre Dame didn't lose this past weekend, right? They won.
They lost to Miami.
I'm a retard. I watched that game, too.
In
Sorry.
Georgia, Auburn killed...
Auburn killed Georgia.
Actually, no. I don't think Clemson. I think Wisconsin.
I don't think Wisconsin's strength of schedule is strong enough.
Wisconsin, Alabama, Miami, and Oklahoma.
All right. Yeah, no, I'd go Oklahoma too. But you know what? After sounding like such a dickhead, I'm probably going to cut this out anyway. So never mind. But, yeah, let's get back to basketball. So with that, tomorrow's going to be a good night of basketball, and I'm excited to watch it. One more thing I wanted to touch on. I know this is a little bit of a Homer thing to talk about, but speaking of...
You want to talk about UConn?
Not UConn specifically. But since we were talking about player suspensions for stupid reasons with Billy Preston, let's talk about what happened to Jalen Adams, because I feel like that's kind of nationally relevant for something so stupid to happen, to get your star point guard banned from your first game. It's ridiculous.
Dude, do you want to talk? Ban him for the rest of the season. They don't need him.
After what Terry Larrier did, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised. But no, the fact that UConn was able to do that well, even with Elsarik cold and Jalen not playing, it gave me a little confidence.
Shoulder is not 100%. Like, a lot of his misses in the game were really off and really short.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think he tore his right rotator cuff, which is his shooting arm and shooting side.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if his shoulder's 100%. It might be a mental thing. Could have been nerves. Could have been everything. But Terry Larrier looks solid.
The thing that concerns me with Larrier is every time he goes to the bench, he's icing his knee, which obviously isn't good.
I mean, that's normal, though, to keep the swelling out.
Yeah, but with all the knee problems he's had, it concerns me a little bit.
I think it's more of his knee is not used to playing. Like, I'm surprised he's still on a brace. But I think that's what it is. Like, he's going to be sore. He's going to have to ice it and take care of it. But the thing with the ACL tears is not really about your knee. It's more about your hip and your hip flexibility and strength, because when people tear their ACL, if you like stop and took a freeze frame, their hip is always turning in. And then the weight coming down the body causes the tendons and knees to collapse. So as long as they rehab it right, it shouldn't be an issue. Like, the soreness and ice is to be expected. But watching Terry Larrier on Friday, he reminded me of Fresno State Paul George. A lot of people with Paul George, they don't realize he was drafted on potential, and he wasn't anywhere close to what he is now as an NBA player when he came out of college. He was kind of tall, lanky. He liked to shoot a lot of threes, and then he just kept improving off the dribble and getting stronger. And I think Terry Larrier, I don't think he'll be the same level of player as Paul George in the NBA, but I think that's a comparison that's going to get floated around a lot for him. And from an NBA standpoint, he has size. He can play small ball four, and he can shoot and play defense. So I think his NBA ceiling is pretty high. But
if he can stay healthy,
that's my biggest concern. Stop falling over the threes. Like, sometimes just go to the rack and try to get fouled. Like, he tries to shoot too many the one-legged Dirk fadeaways and too many threes from time to time. That's one thing I noticed about him last year, too, in the four games I did get to see. But I think he'll be fine, assuming he stays healthy. I think Alterique will shake some of the rust off with time.
And then we'll have Jalen back, and we'll be good. Final four, here we come.
Jalen, I don't really care. I don't like Jalen Adams' game that much. I'm not really a fan of his. I think he's pretty one-dimensional, and he hasn't really improved that much in terms of his freshman year now. I think the Shabazz comparisons, they hurt him because just play style-wise, they're nothing alike. Personality-wise, they're nothing alike. The only similarity is that they're both from Roxbury.
And I've heard a lot of comparisons from this year to the 2014 championship team, like Jalen to Shabazz, Alterique to Boatwright, and Terry to Daniels.
Daniels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like kind of like a glittering generality. Like, they have some similarities, so people just took it there. But in reality, I don't think Jalen is anything like Shabazz, like I was saying. He looks to score first. Shabazz looks to set up his guys, then get the team into the floor of the offense, then go get his. Jalen Adams just wants to score. And all of the numbers he put up from last year, I think they're all skewed. Because, yeah, like 14 points and 6 assists looks good.
He had no one to play with, though.
Look at his research, his usage rate and how much he was relied on the offense. Like, they're all skewed because he just had the ball and he could do whatever he wanted with it. And a lot of his assists, they weren't really good setups. It was like basic reads. Like, they would come off of pick and roll and a lob with Brymer, or Brymer would set a down screen for somebody else to come off a pin down and then roll hard to the rim and catch a lob. Like, they weren't really good point guard reads. It was kind of basic, but hopefully Jalen can turn the corner, because a lot of people in stores and their UConn students think he's an NBA player. But if you look at his matchups a lot of last season with the best guards in the country, so like Tyler Dorsey or Jawan Evans, even who else did they play? Who did they play last season that was good in like January?
Pretty much just Cincy, SMU.
Yeah, I was thinking of Shake Milton. Like Shake Milton, Troy Capane. He got chewed in a lot of those matchups. Even Rob Gray from Houston chewed him. So
yeah,
I think he has a lot to work on and improve in terms of becoming an NBA player. But he's definitely somebody I'll keep an eye on. Obviously, UConn's my alma mater in years too, so I'm going to be following them closely. But just being a realist about it, I don't expect that much from them. A lot of people have them as their last team in, but I think that is even a stretch. But we'll see. They have enough chances to get good wins. The out-of-conference schedule is tough. They have the PK 80, the playing Arizona,
yeah,
Nova, and then the AAC has, I don't know.
The addition of Wichita State made that conference infinitely structured.
So. Maybe SMU. So we'll have chances, but we'll see. I think they could. I think they'll end up being one of the last, one of the next four teams out. So in that 5-8 range, but we'll see.
If they could be last four in, I'll take it. I don't care as long as they make the tournament. But with that, I think it's enough. You know, talking about our Homer team. So let's move on to, like you just said, the PK 80 tournament. That's by far the biggest fall tournament I've seen in years. I wish they would do this like every year because it's amazing.
We have Portland, North Carolina,
Arkansas, Oklahoma, UConn, Oregon. I'm just going to rattle them off quick. Michigan State, DePaul. That's the first bracket. They call that the victory bracket. And then in the motion bracket, you got Portland State, Duke, Butler, Texas, Florida, Stanford, Ohio State, and Gonzaga. So, probably the most stacked tournament I've ever seen in terms of, like, early season tournaments.
Kentucky turned down this tournament, too, so they could have been in the field.
Isn't Kentucky an Adidas school, though?
Kentucky? No.
You're not an Adidas school?
No.
See, that shows how much I know about this whole...
Biggest breadwinners. They make...
My bad. All right. Well, I know. Can you imagine Kentucky in this too? That'd be incredible. And Georgetown actually left, which I don't know why you would do that. Maybe they don't trust Patrick Ewing enough.
They turned it down because they were going to come off the Champions Classic, and then their out of conference schedule was already tough.
Well, they initially agreed to it when JT3 was still their coach, I think. And then once Patrick Ewing took over and they got rid of Thompson, then they backed out of it because originally they were in, and then they replaced him with DePaul. You know.
Yeah.
Big East powerhouse to Paul is taking over for Georgetown.
It makes sense. Like that part, they don't really have that many Midwest teams outside of Ohio State and Butler. But
yeah.
I mean, this is perfect for Thanksgiving. Like, I don't even like football.
Oh, so. I'm gonna do nothing but watch basketball all weekend. I cannot wait. This can't come quick enough, to be honest. I'm loving it. But you want to run through the bracket real quick and just take your picks. We don't have to go in depth. Just say like how you got it going.
So
let's go round by round. You do yours, and then I'll do mine. But they'll probably be really similar.
Starting with the victory bracket, I have Carolina over Portland. That's pretty obvious. And then Arkansas over Oklahoma. Like I said, a lot of people – Arkansas did lose a lot, but they were still the SEC runner-up for what it's worth. But I do want to see Trae Young in that game. Then on the other side, I have UConn over Oregon. It's kind of a down year for Oregon. And I think UConn is going to have to play Michigan State in the next game, which I'd pick Michigan State in. And on the other top side of that bracket, the victory bracket, I think Carolina will beat Arkansas, so they have to play Michigan State. And I'd have Michigan State winning the victory bracket, which is pretty obvious. Then the motion bracket, I think Duke and Texas will match up in the second round on one side, and Florida and Ohio State on the other. I have Florida over Ohio State and Duke over Texas, even though I think it'll be a really competitive game. Andrew Jones is really underrated for Texas as a sophomore. Then obviously Matt Coleman and Mohamed Bamba, the two big freshmen they have coming in. So that'll be an interesting game, but I think Duke has a little bit too much going on to not beat Texas, even though a lot of NBA guys will be watching Mo Bamba versus Marvin Bagley real close. And out of the motion bracket eventually, I think Florida is going to come out. I think they played Duke really tough last year in the Garden. They almost won that game. And Duke, I don't think Duke is as good as they were from a talent standpoint as they were last year. So I think Florida will edge them out and then eventually lose to Michigan State. And
well, actually, the winner of these two brackets, I don't think even play each other, which is stupid.
Don't?
No, there's like two winners, which is ridiculous. But
so for the victory bracket, I have Michigan State. The motion bracket, I have Florida.
All right, that sounds good. Mine's pretty similar. In terms of winners, I also have Michigan State, but the way we get there is slightly different. I'm going to say, obviously, North Carolina over Portland. Don't really think that's a question.
Yeah, I think Portland is just like the Chamonix of this tournament. They're the local
exactly.
School.
Them and Portland State are only there because it's in Portland. There's no other reason for them to be there. Which is why I find it a little ironic that the like front page of the PK80 tournaments, like 16 elite programs. I can't remember the last time Portland and Portland State were elite programs, but whatever you got to do to market that, go for it. But yeah, North Carolina over Portland. I have Oklahoma over Arkansas. I just like Lon Kruger, and I think they're coming off a down year, and they're coming out with a vengeance. You're right, Arkansas was pretty solid in the SEC last year. Yeah. But it's honestly, it's almost a pick 'em game. I'm just going to pick Oklahoma.
I'm excited to see Trae Young in that matchup. That's the only reason I would watch. I want to see how he does. Because Arkansas is big, and they play physical, and they're fast, and
trust me, I want to see Arkansas become like the powerhouse they were in the 90s. Like, I'm pulling for them to make a comeback. And it seems like they're getting there, but I just feel like this is Oklahoma's year. I think they're going to be in the top three in the Big 12. So, I don't know. We'll see. But I'm picking Oklahoma.
TCU's asleep in the Big 12.
Jamie Dixon's coming off a great NIT win, and he's got a lot of hype.
Jalen Fisher's going to be healthy.
Speaking of which, how does Pitt feel? They pushed Jamie Dixon out, and then I think last night they lost to what? Navy, I think, was the school they lost to.
Yeah, and it's not like they have a scrub as a coach. Like, they got Kevin Stallings.
But I mean, that's
a perfect example of what I was talking about earlier, like the keeping up with the Joneses in college basketball. As soon as Pitt moved to the ACC, they wanted to be able to compete with Duke and Carolina and even Syracuse, and they just couldn't. So they pushed out a really good coach in Jamie Dixon.
I think Jamie Dixon only missed the tournament two years that he was at Pitt, and that wasn't good enough for them.
Much to work with.
No, he took over that program and made it great. And just because they had a couple down years recently, suddenly all of a sudden he's got
to
go
to be able to compete in the ACC. But
yeah,
I think he's going to turn around TCU because there's a lot of basketball wise, there's a lot of talent in the DFW, and I think he's going to keep it at home. And if they make the tournament this year, it'll be huge. I think they will. It'll be an at-large team. I think they'll be one of the best teams in the Big 12. But
and he's at his alma mater too, so I'm happy for Jamie Dixon. I feel like this is good for him, and I'm wishing him nothing but the best. I hope he succeeds and rubs it in Pitt's face, because that old Big East rivalry is still, you know, still strong with UConn. So
UConn Pitt,
eat shit, Pitt. So next, yeah, what did I say? Did I already get to UConn, Oregon? I have UConn over Oregon. Yeah. Not because Oregon's a bad team by any means.
But Jalen might not be able to play, actually. His summoning's on.
They're going to get him out there. There's no way UConn allows Jalen to not play in the PK80 tournament. This is the biggest tournament we've played in recent years. They said that, yeah, his summon is that day. But all he really has to do is, like, go to court and – I mean, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but he has to just, like, find out, like, what he has to do, probably, like, community service or something, or pay a fine. And I've heard, like, he could even just get his lawyer to, like, go in his place. So I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't even end up going that day or if he gets it moved or something. But if for some reason his appeal to get it moved doesn't work and he can't fly out with the rest of the team, you can bet that Ollie's going to have him on a plane that night. Overnighting to Oregon, because there's no way they're going to let him miss the tournament. This tournament basically makes or breaks our preseason, because once we get to in-conference play...
I wish they were on the other side of the bracket.
The other side's significantly stronger.
And even Texas. I wish they were on that side. I'd like to see them match up with Duke. Even Texas, I think, would beat them and give them a lot of problems.
But even if they lost... or, like, ended up in the loser side of the bracket, the losers from that side of the bracket are way stronger than the losers from this side, without a doubt.
Yeah, this side is, like, it's almost like a JV and varsity division.
Like Portland's clearly going to lose, DePaul's clearly going to lose, so there's a good chance UConn ends up playing DePaul in the second round. That's not going to be great for our strength of schedule.
DePaul's playing Michigan State, aren't they?
Yeah, they're playing Michigan State in the first round. So...
that's not happening. UConn's going to play Michigan State, which would be – I want to see Terry Larrier and Miles Bridges matchup. That would be interesting.
Oh, no, no. I meant, like, if UConn loses to Oregon, they're going to have to play DePaul. So I'd much rather be on the other side of the bracket where – let's say on the other side of the bracket they took the place of Stanford.
I don't even know if UConn would be able to beat Oregon. They got – well, I mean, Oregon did lose everything, but
They have Peyton Pritchard coming back.
They got Oregon and Maury last year.
Actually, they had a nice late run against Oregon. They just couldn't put it straight together. They
cut it to 10, but like for –
yeah. And I think that's the game where Larry tore his ACL too. I could be wrong, though.
They tore his ACL against Oklahoma State.
And then they played Oregon the game after or the game before?
No, Oregon was the third game. They played Oklahoma State, lost, and they played Chaminade, won. Then they played Oregon.
Then they played Oregon, yeah. And so they played Oregon without Larrier, without Al-Tariq. Mamadou, I don't think, played. I could be wrong.
Didn't really matter. All he did was get fouls.
Yeah. Actually, that's one thing I can say about UConn is they stayed out of foul trouble against whoever we played the other day.
They play tomorrow. They play BU.
No, they play Stony Brook tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, Stony Brook, sorry.
But cover starts at 6:30. Watch UConn. Anyway, back to the bracket. But, like, take, for example, if UConn was in the place of Stanford on the other side of the bracket, if they lost – these are the teams they would have to play in the next round. If they lost to Florida in the first round, they'd have to play either Ohio State or Gonzaga, which Ohio State isn't necessarily a good team this year. I mean, we don't really know. Chris Holtman, like, maybe he could turn it around.
And Gonzaga is kind of like North Carolina. They lost everything.
Yeah, but either way, they're still well-respected programs. It's not like we're playing DePaul. It's not like we're playing Portland. Yeah. You know?
Is the home-and-home with Ohio State? Yeah, it is over this year.
It was over last year. 2 years ago, we played
over last year.
Yeah, we played Ohio State at
it was in Columbus, because I remember our junior year.
We beat Ohio State, yeah.
Yeah, I was at the game. I went with like Lanza, Silverdi.
Oh, yeah, that was a good game. I don't know if we should be name-dropping people on this, but anyway.
Who knows who they are? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Point is, back to the bracket. I got UConn over Oregon, Michigan State over DePaul, clearly. Second round, North Carolina over Oklahoma, Michigan State over UConn. And then in the championship game, I feel like it's 75-25 Michigan State, but there's definitely a chance North Carolina could pull the upset. North Carolina's like basically a top 10 team.
Strawberry is still out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, okay. Which the fact that how he got hurt is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I'd rather have him get in a scooter accident like Jalen did than break his hand playing. I'm assuming 2K.
Were they on South Eagleville Road or something?
They were, like, coming up right by Gamble, I heard. Like, right by the old frats in South. So, I don't know.
That's stupid.
I don't know. Did they ever say who he was racing against, by the way?
No.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. But the fact is that they already announced that he's coming back for tomorrow. He's going to play tomorrow. So, whatever. It's stupid. It's in the past. But Joel Berry, like, he actually hurt his team with what he did. He's going to be out for a couple weeks anyway, with an injured hand. And even when he does come back, there's no guaranteeing that his hand's going to be, you know, back to what it was.
I mean, I broke my hand my freshman year. I broke my hand in, like, the end of October. And I was ready to try out tryouts in Massachusetts are always the first Monday after Thanksgiving. I was ready. And I was fine, like, 4 weeks later. It's usually, like, 4 to 6 weeks if it's a clean break, which means no surgery, which it was. So I think as long as he just stays in, like, cardio shape, and doesn't just sit around for 4 weeks, it'd be fine.
Yeah, but it'd still be better for North Carolina if they had him to start the season than if they didn't.
Yeah, lucky for them that the start of the season isn't that tough.
Wait, so according to that timeline, is he going to be back for PK80, or is he not going to be back?
I think it'll be close.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. If North Carolina has Joel Berry, I give them a solid chance of beating Michigan State.
Oh, yeah.
Without him, I think it's almost a no-brainer that Michigan State wins, though.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so let's go over to the motion side of the bracket. Duke over Portland State, no question. Butler over Texas. I feel like Shaka hasn't been living up to expectations that people have for them in Texas. The one shining light they have right now is Mo Bamba. But I feel like Butler, who had a decent win over Princeton last night, who isn't a joke of a team. Princeton's one of the top teams in the Ivy.
Borderline tournament team.
Yeah, so they beat them by double digits, just barely. I think they won by 10. But they won at Hinkle Fieldhouse. So I like Butler over Texas, but, you know, that's also kind of a toss-up for me. Florida over Stanford and Gonzaga over Ohio State. Going to the next round, Duke over Butler, Florida over Gonzaga, And then in the championship game, I want to say Florida because I hate Duke, but I got to go Duke. I don't know. I'm going to go Duke. They're the number one team in the country right now. Florida did just win convincingly tonight, so I got to give them that. Granted, it was against Garden Weber or some team like that.
Yeah, it was only a fifth game, too.
Yeah, but
they're like a week apart, but I think Duke will be obviously more battle tested now. They've already played two games, and their third game, which is tomorrow, will be against Michigan State, is one of the best teams in the country. Florida got a late start to the season compared to everybody else. Their first game was today. So, I mean, I don't think I picked Florida just because, like, I think Duke's not ready. Like I said, I don't think they're ready to make that jump in competition. So I picked Florida. They're older. They're more physical. Keyvon Allen is really underrated. I've been a fan of his since his freshman year. And I think they'll beat Duke. But I can see why you picked them.
Yeah, just don't ever count out Krzyzewski. You know, that's my mentality.
I think Coach K is an overrated coach, but...
I don't know. He's won, what, 5 national titles in 3 different decades? Yeah, I
think Mike Bray is the best coach in the country. I've thought that for the past 3 or 4 years.
I respect your opinion. I disagree, but that's a good opinion.
He's the best coach in the country.
Okay.
What he does with the kids he has at Notre Dame every year, it's amazing.
Then how come Notre Dame never receives the attention I feel like they deserve? They're consistently a top, like, 25 team, but I feel like they always go by the wayside.
The first thing that you're going to think of when you think of Notre Dame is football. They're always a football school.
Yeah.
Being in the ACC obviously helps them, but, like, if you don't like basketball, like, you don't appreciate the sport, you know, you think Notre Dame is boring because they don't dunk. They shoot a lot of threes, but they're not, like, a highlight team. They're just methodical. They'll come, beat you down, they won't beat themselves, and then they'll leave. Jim Larranaga is another really good coach. I forget who's at Iowa State right now, but he's really good. And then Tim Jankovic at SMU is awesome.
He's filling the shoes of Larry Brown. So I feel like after Larry Brown left, SMU was expected to have it down here. And, Jankovic just took over and took him to the tournament, right? So.
I just hate watching Cincinnati.
I hate Mick Cronin. He's a leprechaun.
But just like Cincinnati, the way they play basketball is not aesthetically pleasing at all. Like, they just play the game ugly, score like 50 points.
Did they change it all this week in the rankings?
Last time I know they were 12th, but
they're still 12th. They haven't changed at all. But by the way, Kentucky did not fall nearly as much as you thought. They fell to 7th.
Oh, I thought they were 15th in somebody's poll.
Nah, Xavier's 15. Oh, maybe in someone's poll, but in the overall AP poll, they're 7.
Xavier's 15. I was just watching them versus Ryder.
How are they doing against Ryder?
They were winning.
I think I picked them to cover the spread, so I hope they absolutely just demolish them. But anyway, you want to wrap this thing up?
Yeah, we'll be back at some point next week.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should change the name, because I doubt we're going to ever post consistently on Fridays.
Hella catchy. I like the name, the way it is.
Alright. we'll leave it then for the time being. Be sure to check out our new website, totalsportspub.com. Me and Jeff are writers and contributors on that. We run it with one of our other good friends from college. Right now, we're getting into the heat of basketball season, so it's definitely a good website to check out if you want to keep up to date with college basketball. I recently did a list counting down the top 10 teams in the country, in my opinion, and breaking them down. I released one article a day, so that full list is up. The start of the season has begun. And
going along with what Kyle said, I'm also on Twitter for the Sports Pub, SportsPub, on sports, PUB. So check me out on Twitter. Our live tweet for any game I'm watching, whether it's the NBA or college, boxing, UFC, whatever. So definitely, if you can, give me a follow. But Woody, we'll be back again next week for sure, right, Kyle?
Yeah, absolutely. Going off that, I also got assigned the position of our social media coordinator today. So if you follow Total Sports Pub on Instagram and Twitter, be ready for some severe shitposting and really dank sports memes. With that, I think we're good. And we'll be back maybe later this week, most likely next week. We'll probably be doing 1 to 2 a week. But don't know about you, Jeff, but I'm committed this year to actually follow through all the way to the end of the season.
Dude, I was the one who was committed last year. What the fuck are you talking about?
No, I know. It was all me last year. I'm saying I'm back. I'm ready to go. Last year, we had school to distract me. But like I said, I'm unemployed. I don't have anything to worry about right now. So we'll be back next week. Take care, guys.